When you're looking at your conversion rate on Google Ads, you'll notice it's normally somewhere between sort of 1, 5, sometimes 10%. But we're going to be talking about why the other percentage of people don't convert.
This is the Winning with Shopify podcast. On this podcast, we interview the brands that are successfully scaling up their Shopify stores to learn how they did it, the mistakes they made, and the lessons that they've learned. If you want to get some weekly insights and offers directed to your inbox, head over to winningwithshopify.com and sign up to our newsletter. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's show.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Winning with Shopify podcast. For anyone that's not tuned in before, and it's your first time listening to the show, it's an absolute privilege to have you tuning in. And today, I'm delighted that you've tuned in because today is an in-person interview as well. And I'll come on to all of that in a second. If you've been tuning in for a while, welcome back. It's great to have you guys listening to the show and supporting us and having lots of amazing conversations with us as well. If you want to reach out and get in touch with us, ask any questions, start a conversation, or even suggest a topic that we should cover on the podcast, please go to winningwithshopify.com. And fill out any of the forms on there. They all go to my lovely colleague Byron or myself, so we can pick those up. But today we're going to be talking about a really interesting topic. So when you're looking at your conversion rate on Google Ads, you'll notice it's normally somewhere between sort of 1, 5, sometimes 10%. But we're going to be talking about why the other percentage of people don't convert. So say your conversion rate is 2%, why do the other 98% of people not convert? Joining me is one of my amazing colleagues, Daisy. So without further ado, Daisy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. It's great to be back again. I think we recorded one just over a year ago, so it's great to be back.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back on. And for anyone that's not worked with you before, they're not a client, or they've never tuned into one of the episodes you've been on before, give us a quick overview to your role at Spec and a little bit about what you do in the team here as well.
Yeah, I've been here for just over 2.5 years working in the PPC team. So a PPC consultant here working across e-com and lead gen. And yeah, I've been here for 2.5 years and loved every minute of it.
Good, good. Well, as your boss, I love to hear that. That's great. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today, Daisy. And we're going to be unpacking this topic quite a bit because it is probably one of the biggest questions we get, certainly from new clients or non-clients, new brands, are asking us, like, all these people are clicking on my ads and they're not converting. So today we're going to try and break down some of those barriers and some of the things we do. And one of the biggest things we do, which we're going to unpack, is how we actually split campaigns up. And what we mean by this is you could have a campaign on Google Ads with all of your products in, but that tends to not be the best way to do things. So Daisy, before we jump into, like, we've got 10 things we're going to run through, but before we jump into the 10 things we do, the 10 different types of splits and why, tell us why we do a split in the first place. What is the point? What are we trying to achieve?
I think the first thing we always like to think of is it's so important to test and learn. We're working with a big budget. So, you know, we're looking at some of our clients between 30 and 50K and sort of upwards per month. So if you look at that over sort of a year, it's so important to gain data from that and to know what's working and what's not. We've got clients that have anywhere from like 3 products to tens of thousands. So it's important to know what's working, what products we can push, what products work well, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess if we don't get the learnings and run the test in the first place, we're never going to find new things or apply any creativity to what we're doing, are we?
No, exactly. And I think even looking at different campaign types, for example, like throughout e-com, we use a lot of performance max, but it's, you know, testing things like YouTube and display and seeing what works well on different clients, and what works for one client might not necessarily work well for the other.
Mm. And that's always the hardest thing, is when somebody asks you a question like, how do I do this? We always start like almost like a politician and say, well, it depends, doesn't it? Or quite often with clients, we're very open and say, we don't know. Like, that tends to work very well for lots of brands, but it might not work for you. So let's test it.
Exactly. And I think we always say to clients, we won't know until we try. And we always like to have that small test budget. Like we say, even 5% of the budget per month to say, let's test and we can find out what works well. And looking, you know, into peak to decide we're not going to run certain things because we know it didn't work well earlier on in the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we split a campaign, what are some of the things we can control differently now that we've split it? Mm-hmm. Like, why wouldn't we just test stuff within one campaign?
Yeah, I think budget's always a big thing to look at. And we're looking at things like profit margins, which I know we'll touch on later. Mm-hmm. But to say, you know, we make more money by selling this specific range, okay, then let's pull those products out into a new campaign, put more budget behind it and see what result that has on, like, overall.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the biggest things we find with clients, isn't it? Is when you do like a split, suddenly almost every single time one campaign will outperform the other. And being able to then control the budget at campaign level within Google Ads, you literally just go, that half, you know, say you split it 50-50, that £500 a day is performing much better than this £500 a day. Let's make it 750 and 250. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the total ROI we're getting now is higher. We've just made our client more profit. And so
exactly. And I think it's always good to look at like the lag time within the data, because it's so easy to make decisions based on, you know, a couple of days if our budgets are big enough for it. But looking over like a month's worth of data to sort of have in the account to then make those decisions. And we need that budget to decide what's working and what's not over that long period of time.
Yeah, yeah. And something you've touched on, I'm going to explain really quickly, is lag time. Mm-hmm. Because we talk about it a lot. And one of the dangers we always get is we get so stuck internally of just, we just talk at a million miles an hour in technical language. And even some of our most experienced and highest paying clients are like, sorry, guys, what on earth is going on? When we say lag time, that's the time between somebody clicking on an advert and actually purchasing a product. We've got to be really careful in making decisions or doing tests, running splits or split testing something, because if we make a change today, for 30 days now, the pre-change setup of campaigns is still going to be getting revenue attributed back. So if I click today and then buy through SEO or direct or email or another channel in 6 weeks' time, it's today that my revenue is going to be attributed in your account. So we do have some clients where they kind of phone us up in a panic and say like, well, I've had no revenue this week. And we're like, it always says that.
Yeah.
Just wait 3, 4, 5 weeks. And we try and calculate how long that lag period is.
Yeah.
But it's really important then if you run a test not to freak out after the first or second week. Equally, like we've got to remember that it's a business. There's real revenue, there's customers, money needs to be coming into the bank account. And so, yeah, if something has really affected bottom line, the first thing we generally do is undo it and then kind of take stock. And we have the ability to do that. We back up accounts regularly and that kind of thing.
And I think there's so many different systems. Like we have Shopify itself to look at what's coming in. We've then got GA4 on Google Ads, and it's using all of those different systems to sort of build a picture. And it's not always clear. And it's explaining that to clients as well.
And why Facebook will tell you you've made £1 billion, but nothing else will. It's also always a challenge.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're looking at 10 different campaign splits we do. Mm-hmm. And we've explained what a split is, which is basically we're going to chuck the campaign in half and we're going to split it across lots of different ways. It's a little bit like, I sometimes think about it like email segmentation, where you're going to segment the way you're running something based on some data. We're going to alternate these points. And Daisy, you're starting with number one. So why don't you kick us off? What's the first campaign split that we sometimes look at?
First one's location. So looking at the campaigns, I think we run quite a lot of US campaigns. Looking at the different states, we tend to see there's very clear winners, like LA and New York always tend to perform better. Again, it's all relevant. Like if you're based in another state, you'd probably see that tend to work well. So what we find sometimes is a lot of the budget is put behind some of those specific states, and we're not given any of the other areas a chance to show. So by pulling out LA, for example, and sort of splitting the budget that way, or then giving the spend to other areas, and you might not know if it works, but again, it's all sort of that testing phase.
Yeah. And there's a location report in Google Ads, isn't there? So you can just filter it by states and go, these ones I'm profitable in and these ones I'm not profitable.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you just draw a dotted line there and go, right, one campaign's going to have the unprofitable ones, one's going to have profitable ones. And and a campaign like that, would you split the budget 50-50 initially, or would you actually put more behind the better performing states?
I think it depends on the goal. Like if the goal is to make revenue overall, we want to put more money behind the states that have a higher ROI. Mm-hmm. But I think brand awareness is important. So sort of making sure your presence is in all of the different states is important. I think UK, we always see London tends to perform better. So again, we've got some clients where we do a 50-50 split because they're based in London. People tend to buy that bit more. So yeah, it all depends on the client. There are many different ways you could look at it.
And equally, and this is what I love about PPC, is you could say exactly the same the other way around and say, we have some clients based in London and we went to spend more in London and it completely failed.
Yeah.
So we put less money in London and more in the rest of the country. I find it absolutely fascinating when you start to look at locality. Mm-hmm. When you first run that split, so let's say it was top 25 and bottom 25 states in the US. I know there's more than 50. But let's say you've done half and half and you split them out. Do you find that performance remains the same? You can just adjust budget, or actually does something else happen?
I think there are some scenarios where we've done the split and we've seen an impact within a couple of days. Mm. When we sort of launch a campaign, you know, if we're pulling specific states out into a new campaign, the campaign that was running previously has all of that data to work off. We can then make more decisions with it. But equally, it's important to branch out and try new things and almost give Google a bit of a kick and, you know, try to reset the algorithm, because it gets so used to just doing its thing that it's nice to almost challenge it in a way.
Yeah, and we've certainly had calls with clients, haven't we, where we said, like, here's the the better performing states and the underperforming states. And they'll go, why are the underperforming states performing better than the overperforming states. And it's like, well, since we split them, they've now got more budget and Google's actually showing more in those states. And Google's now learned those other states actually perform really well.
Yeah.
And that's a really key learning.
I think a lot of the other thing as well to mention is to some of our clients, it's almost surprising what states perform the best. They might think their ideal customer sits in LA, but it's completely opposite to what they think. And so it's interesting to share that information with clients as well.
Yeah, I used to play a game years ago. We don't do projects like this as much anymore, but I used to play a game with clients where I'd say, who is your target audience? Everyone write down a piece of paper in front of you. And then I'd bring up the stats, having done a survey with their customers or looked at the Google Analytics, or even just looking at, like, you can run people's first names through a tool, for example, and it tells you if they're male or female. And they'll be like, oh, we're like 98% female. And it's like, you're 40% female, 6% male. That changes everything. Yeah. Branding, photography, all of it. But anyway, really good, strong starter. Number two, which I'm going to talk about, and Daisy's going to comment on as well, is customer groups. Mm-hmm. So what we mean by customer groups is you might actually want to split the campaigns by age demographic, or you might actually, like using male and female as a good example, you might want to target women with a different type of campaign or different products or something to what you actually want to target with men. You might find, and this has been amazing learning, and what we're not talking loads about today just because we literally don't have time, is how to find out some of the information that we're talking about today. But if you find, for example, and this wouldn't surprise me in the slightest, I'm going to be a little bit sexist here and say, men just click and buy it. And women do shop around and they spend more time and more of a considered purchase. And that is from, it's not unanimous. Brands are all different and it varies on the type of product. But if you were to find that, for example, you could create a more enhanced kind of, here's some cool buying guides and other stuff if the journey was slower for one group of customers versus another group. The same with age as well. Do you find actually that younger people are much more impulsive and just click buy? Which I read a report recently that said actually they're not. Younger people are, they've got less cash to spend. So they are actually looking more and more and more and doing more research before buying something. But we certainly split campaigns by customer groups. And it might be customers that have already purchased previously. It might be customers that, as I've said about demographics, it might be customers, as we said already, locations. It might be customers, and this is the really cool one, is customers that have bought a certain product. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later about connecting data up. But yeah, it might be customers that have bought a certain product. So if a customer in their first order spent less than $100, you might retarget certain or different products to those people, then you're targeted to a customer that spent more than $100. Now, all these ideas sound great, but again, you've got to check the data first.
Yeah. I think there's such a big percentage on Google Ads that is unknown as well, which is something to bear in mind. And it does seem to be creeping up with all the new cookie policies that are coming to play. But I think, yeah, just being aware that we have to take that into account. Like if we're specifically going after women, then let's also put unknown into that category as well, because we just don't know and Google doesn't give us that data.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it really is the bane of our lives. Yeah. I think looking at that data and going, not set. And you're like, what? It's like, how am I supposed to learn anything? Which from my point of view, I think we just need to engage with customers more. Mm-hmm. We need to ask them more questions, start more conversations, push out more surveys, do a post-purchase survey. You know, why did you buy from us today? Please fill out this box. That is possibly the most vital bit of information that a brand could ever learn, I think.
Yeah, I think Google's such a small, or hopefully not too much of a small part of it, but looking at other channels as well, like it's so easy to be like, oh, you know, our audience is between 25 and 35. Let's base all of our marketing around that. But I think, yeah, it's just taking some of it with a pinch of salt as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Daisy, what's number three on our list?
Number three is product categories. So clients of ours have products ranging from like £10 or $10 to hundreds of thousands. So yeah, it's taking that into account and almost segmenting your campaigns into those different groups, putting separate budgets behind them, having separate targets for them. And again, like depending on the goal and what specific products you want to push, it's looking and balancing the budgets between those.
Slightly jealous you got this one on your list because I love this one. And right now, actually, this is one of the biggest ones for our clients. Mm-hmm. And I think if we'd structured our list better, we probably would have put it at number 10.
Yeah.
But this one, we seem to be getting the best impact at the moment. Mm-hmm. But that will change. We'll change with the seasons. But yeah, certainly we've got a few clients where we sort of gone, okay, let's take a few ranges out of the main campaign that some are performing really well and some are not performing well. But we've based it on quite a few different things, haven't we? Not just going, oh, let's just try tables as an example.
Yeah, I think there's so much data within any campaign, specifically Performance Max, and if asset groups just in general, looking at that data and deciding, you know, is the budget being spent on those certain products and we're not giving other products a chance to show, and looking at the ROI overall on that to decide then what is the goal for that new campaign. Again, looking at a nice wide date range.
Absolutely. And one of the funniest things I think is we sometimes get really excited about this product range here is just doing so well. This is getting like a 15 to 1 ROI. Everything else is sub 5. but this is $15 back for every one that we spend. Let's move that. And the client goes, now we're about to run out of stock on that. And you're like, you absolute idiots. Like, please don't do that.
Yeah.
But we have to, there's nothing we can do about it. You know, we have a bit of a saying here of like, if you can't change it, move on. And if you can change it, change it. So I think it's just there's sometimes frustrations like that. But we also get clients sometimes, and I know a couple of you watch the podcast, you'll relate to this. We get clients that sometimes say like, oh, I'm just not selling any of this range, but I know my competitors are, or I'm selling loads through SEO, but not through PPC.
Yeah.
So sometimes we do a split like that, don't we? And just pull that particular product category out and go, all right, let's just go after those particular products.
Yeah. And I think what we tend to find is sometimes customers are clicking on that specific product, going onto the website, purchasing that alongside something else as well. So even though we're pushing that product, they're also buying other things alongside that as well. So yeah, increasing the average order value.
The other thing as well, going back to like stock levels and stuff, is it's always classic that the best performing product is like about to go out of stock, or they don't have any margin on it. Or there's always something that pops up, which is why it's good to have a range of products. You can trial these different categories of things. But one of our clients in particular, they were selling big parasols, these umbrellas to put in your garden to shade you from the sun, you know, very simple. But the bases of them, you could buy just the base, and they were like full of water or solid concrete. So these things are really, really heavy, and they cost a fortune to deliver. And they phoned us up and sort of said like, guys, we're selling too many of these things. It costs more to deliver than the margin we make. When someone actually buys one, they have to buy it with a parasol umbrella or some other products. And we were like, this is our best performing campaign. Yeah. We're throwing money at this thing to get it. But again, it comes back to communication. Yeah. That was a really quick lesson with that client of like, as soon as something changes, mm-hmm. whether it goes up or down, tell the client immediately and just say, any thoughts, any comments? And then someone's going, no, that's absolutely fine. But in this particular situation, we actually went one step a lot further than PPC. Mm-hmm. We spoke to them and said, please find a way to deliver these bases. Even if you change the price and put the price up, we could lower the conversion rate here. And again, we're trying to talk about that 98% of traffic. How do we get it to convert? We could even lower the conversion rate if we still sell them, but profitably. Mm-hmm. And we looked on other websites, and all sites said you can only buy a base if you buy the umbrella. And so actually we'd created a bit of an edge, which mm-hmm. we didn't know about. They could then deliver those because they found a courier that could do that.
Yeah.
Absolute game changer for the business. It's now one of the best-selling products. And so I think it's really important that just because something doesn't work today, let's find a solution that quite often is not going to be within PPC.
Yeah. And like now we're pushing outdoor earlier and earlier each year just because of that reason.
As long as the rain allows in the UK. But
as long as it's sunny enough.
Absolutely. And leading on nicely, actually, point number four on our list is product performance. And what we mean by product performance is some businesses go, look, these are my top 50 or 100 products. These things, I turn over $2 or $3 million a year just on the top 15, 20 products. And that's quite normal. It can be really healthy. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But on those top range of products, we can run just those products on Google Shopping, for example, or just through Performance Max. And we can just have almost like an unlimited budget because they're so profitable. Then we could have a second group of products. It's like this stuff, we've got a good margin on it, it converts well, and we're all quite happy. And we can put the rest of our budget in that. And then you said earlier about the sort of 5-10% testing budget, put that into everything else at the bottom. And then as soon as something starts to do well, we can even create things in a system that we have internally here that moves products to different campaigns based on their performance. And that's really powerful then to go, if it's doing well, it works its way into like middle group or top group, and we'll spend more on those groups.
Yeah.
But it is funny, isn't it, that clients will often sometimes say to us, like, those are my best sellers. We put them in their own campaign, and we have to kind of break the news gently of like, they're not doing well. Yeah.
Talking about best sellers leads quite nicely onto point five, which is product margins. I think we spoke about it a little bit previously, but it's just, again, looking at all of the products that we're selling and considering which ones we make more money from. And I think we push a lot of clients to say, what ones can we sell more of? Which ones do you want us to hold back selling? And I think when we first start working with a client, they almost don't know that information. Okay. So it's interesting over time, and the longer you work with those clients, the more data you can get. I think, as you said, it all comes down to communication.
Absolutely. And I think that the interesting thing about margins, I find, is that when you say that clients don't often know themselves, mm-hmm. one of the challenges we get, certainly with, I mean, we only really work with kind of very established brands, and the established brands, it's often so far removed that the marketing person's like, do you know what? I should actually really know that. And we kind of take it on ourselves a little bit, that part of our role is to help the business perform. Mm-hmm. So even, as I said earlier, we branch out of PPC stuff. I think certainly when it comes to margins, finding out, like, if a brand sells its own brand, for example, and other brands, which a lot of our clients do, if they sell their own brand, they tend to have a very good margin because they're manufacturing those products. The other brands, they don't. So actually doing a campaign split where you have like our own brands versus other brands we sell, the other brands we sell, we probably need to make like a 5, 6, 7, sometimes even 10 to one ROI, but own brand is more like 2 to 1. And if they're selling their own brand, their own products now are going out into the market and people are actually using them. So there's often quite a big drive behind own brand, we find. But it is interesting as well, when going back to what we were saying actually about like the bestsellers, for example, or those parasol bases, it is frustrating sometimes when we're sitting there going like, guys, this one's selling really well. And they're like, oh, our margin's like 10% on that. Yeah. It's so bad. Like, just, we shouldn't really be advertising it.
Yeah. I think we used to be so quick to say, oh no, we can't remove products. But I think more and more, and especially looking at the data, we can say to clients like, if you don't feel like it's going to work, let's just remove it. Like, if we've got a good number of products that we're showing for, then, you know, by removing a couple, that 2 to 1 that we're seeing might turn into a 3 or 4 to 1. Now we're not pushing specific products as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just while we're on the topic of products as well, something like I've seen clients do more and more, certainly over the last sort of 3 or 4 years, and certainly since you've been in the business here as well, Daisy, is we're finding the merchandising teams. Mm-hmm. So the guys that actually buy stock in, or the manufacturing team that makes the products, those guys are getting so much more interlinked actually into marketing, which is a really healthy thing, going, all right, this is a bestseller and it's constantly sold out. But the guys in the factory don't even know.
Yeah.
Or the merchandising guys are like, why didn't someone tell me? And so, I mean, it was years ago, for example, when we used to work a lot with TK Maxx here in the UK, or TJ Maxx in the US. When we're working with those guys a lot, the merchandising team, I ended up getting all their email addresses and emailing them going, this is what's selling this week. Mm-hmm. And they'd almost be fighting for going like, right, I'm getting more of that in, more of that, more of that. And it's like, good, go and do that. And we certainly the SEO and PPC performance off the back of it was quite phenomenal.
Yeah.
Just because we now had products people wanted.
Yeah.
Which sounds so basic, but in a big organization like that, where you've got a buying team of 100 people in just in the UK, and I can't imagine how big they were in the US as well, but 100 people like all scrambling, trying to get different stuff sold was mad. But I think we've always got to be careful as well. Like, where do we draw the line? Because otherwise we'll be running the whole business for them.
Yeah.
And it's like in the SEO team, we talk a lot with PR teams and other stuff, but yeah, it can be a challenge.
Yeah, and we work with like a department store here in the UK, and even, you know, we've got different teams, like the beauty team and the fashion team, all coming in saying, can you push this and can you push this? And there are so many ways of doing it. But I think it just all comes down to communication and letting us know what products they want to push.
And bringing it back to campaign splits, mm-hmm. I think that department store is a really good example of like, you'll have one person going like, we've got to sell loads of these sofas we've got because we've got a really good margin on them. We don't have to deliver them. And you're like, and the problem I would say with that a lot of the time, and fortunately that client doesn't do it very often, mm-hmm. but the problem with that is they're looking at it really internally. They're not asking the right question, which is, what do customers want to buy? Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do with these campaign splits, hence why there's sometimes a bit of friction there, but I think between what we want to do and what the client wants to do, is because we're trying to target the thing that's making money using data to drive that. Whereas the client's like, I've got a warehouse full of this and I just need to sell it. And it's really, it can be a challenge at times, but it's something we can't change. Mm-hmm. We've just got to accept that reality and do what we can.
Yeah.
Nice. So what is, you did number 5, so it's now me, number 6, campaign assets, which again, maybe we should have done the other ones the other way around, because you work probably more with campaign assets.
Yeah.
I'll explain what they are and you tell us what we do with them.
Cool.
Campaign assets, certainly in Performance Max, is an image, video, headlines, descriptions, all this kind of stuff we put in, the feed probably being the biggest asset in there. It's all the stuff that makes the adverts, whether it's Google Shopping, a video on YouTube, or a display ad itself, Gmail inbox, sponsored ads. Performance Max targets every single channel on Google, which is why it's so powerful. It's also really dangerous. You do the wrong thing with it, it just goes absolutely mad, spends tons of money and makes nothing back. You've got to be really careful with it at the same time. But certainly the campaign assets, am I right in saying, Daisy, that like some of our clients, they get an A star for sending us assets before we've even asked? And other clients, it's like we're years in and we still don't have a logo that's approved, but we're still getting a good ROI.
Yeah, since. You would think it's easy, wouldn't you? I think like asking for 20 images, a mix of portrait and landscape sometimes. Yeah, I think it depends what they have available, but the more assets we can have and the more information you can give us, the better the results are going to be, the more we can test. I think this time last year we spoke about empty asset groups, which back then were very important, they still are, but that's us giving no assets at all, giving some insight onto the audience, and we're only running via Google Shopping. So those are the shopping ads, whereas Performance Max has a bit of display, a bit of search, discovery, and that used to work really well. I think there'll be a time where Google will probably not let us do that anymore because it's almost a little bit of a cheat code. But yeah, testing different asset groups. So we're testing out audiences, images, which ones work best. We're using a mix of lifestyle ones with white backgrounds, pushing USPs, pushing specific celebs, for example, like if we've got a celeb wearing or using something, that tends to work well. Yeah, the more we can test, the better. I think there's some campaigns that we're testing between 5 and 10 different asset groups. And in an ideal situation, we'd want Google to split the spend into those asset groups, but we don't tend to see that happen.
Yeah, yeah. And I think anyone that works closely with email will relate to all of this in the email world. Mm-hmm. It's very similar of like the content we're talking about with assets is what you put on the email itself. Yeah. The audiences we're targeting, that's your segmentation of audience. Some will be people that have just signed up, some will be past purchasers, some will be unsubscribers, some will be lifetime VIP customers, mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff. But certainly when we're looking at campaign splits, as you say, like we sometimes do a campaign where we've got just a blank asset group, which means the feed is the only thing that runs Google Shopping, as you rightly said. And then we have another campaign that's with all the assets in, and that's where the split bit actually comes into play. But all of this kind of relates. It's not like these aren't like 10 different options, because even with a campaign asset split, it might be that, okay, we've got really good assets for these three product categories, going back to, which I think was number 3, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Going back to these, we've got these three product categories, we've got loads of good assets for them. So let's run a campaign for each of those with the assets, keep it really specific. Then let's run a separate 3 campaigns that's like the kind of low performers, medium performers, top performers, or just put them all into one big campaign at the end, something like that. So yeah, we can certainly do it in lots of different ways.
Yeah, I think video is also an important one, which I know we struggle to get hold of.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you have a YouTube channel, all we need is a direct link and it has to be under 30 seconds. So attaching that to the Performance Max campaign, and that can appear on YouTube along with our images, our products themselves, all of the copy as well. Mm. And that always tends to look nice. If we don't have those, Google can create them automatically, and they're not very good.
And we've had plenty of emails over the years, normally from the CEO going like, oh, I've just seen this and it looks atrocious. And we're like, yep, we know. And it's because we don't have any video to put in. So then the next question is always, okay, how can we not run that? Well, we need to turn Performance Max off. And the implications of that are really big. Yeah. Like, we're now going to only run standard shopping, which is nowhere near as good. So would you like to have a lot less money and make like probably a loss? Mm-hmm. But have no bad videos, or do you want to keep the bad videos? We'll eventually get your team to make some good videos. But video is so expensive. And that's always the hard thing, like to actually shoot a good video. You know, even the time that's gone into setting up where we're sitting right now, you know, is quite considerable. So thanks, Byron. But yeah, campaign assets, really important thing, actually. As I say, if you've got assets for certain things and not other things, split the campaigns by that, or try some campaigns with tons of assets, some with just a few.
Yeah. And I think also making sure they're tagged in the right way. I think we've almost taken over accounts and you've got, I don't know, a specific thing like dresses, for example. We then go in to see what products are tagged and it's got everything in. So we could have a pair of trousers alongside a top image, for example. So just making sure that's very clear. And yeah, that's something that we're checking quite often, because any change that's made internally could have an impact on that.
Yes. Yeah. And we have, to be completely transparent, we have been guilty once or twice of getting an email from a client that says like, this says jumpers.
Yeah.
And then underneath says like, the best trousers you'll ever buy. Why is that? And it's like, all right, we need to do a very clear campaign split, because Google's AI is not realizing there's a trouser description and a jumper headline or whatever the split might be. So
yeah, make the mistake once, never again.
we do always do that. And that is, I think, a good policy in life. It's just, as soon as something's gone wrong, how do we make sure it never happens again? But Daisy, what's number 7 on our list?
Number 7 is data input. So I think Nick mentioned on it briefly, but it's looking at connecting up Klaviyo, so anything we're using for our email, as well as using GA4. So we can do a piece where we're looking at people that have abandoned the cart, and then we can do a retargeting piece to almost, push in front of that specific audience. Within Performance Max, it is just a signal. So that's always something to be aware of. If we're using like a search campaign, for example, it's slightly different. But yeah, feeding as much data as we can into that. And I think we need 1,000 people within that segment to almost then use it in Google Ads. But the more data we can have, the more specific we can be with our targeting.
Yeah. And when we say Klaviyo as well, any of our awesome email sponsors as well from the past, Saguno, OmniSend, there's a few others as well. But certainly connecting those email audience up is really key. And when we connect them up though, in the traditional world, it would be like, okay, non-subscriber, people have unsubscribed, they're still in our email list.
Yeah.
Let's run a campaign to them. Mm-hmm. Performance Max doesn't work like that, does it? It doesn't ring fence those people.
It doesn't. We're giving it a signal and we don't know what percentage of time it's being seen, but it's more of a, these are the types of people we want to appear in front of. So I think over the past couple of years, we've almost only put people that have bought or converted, because we're saying these people, they've worked for us, so let's go after more people like this. But yeah, on the cart abandoners, it's always a tricky one to try and work out whether they're actually appearing in front of them or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with the using the purchasers, the people that have bought before as the main audience, the good thing about that is even those guys are going to see the ads a little bit, as well as almost like a lookalike of those people, which is really powerful. And we tend to find a much higher ROI as soon as we plug that in.
Yeah.
We do a lot of troubleshooting internally of like when we get a new account in or something, it's like, all right, everyone troubleshoot the new account. Let's pull out everything we should do, put in a massive spreadsheet, prioritize it and go, right, we're going to start. And it's all tests. We're going to start testing this stuff first. It's normally one of the first things is we almost put it in the list of like, it's not even a test, just do it, just get on with it. That and like putting all the attributes in the feed is a good example.
We can even use a customer list from Shopify if they've subscribed to marketing, adding all of the information as much as we can, email, address, name, and doing a retargeting piece on there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Number 8 on the list, we're going to branch out of Google Ads for a minute and then we're going to come back. And we're going to branch out to the world of email. We're mentioning it now at the moment anyway, but with email, there's a massive opportunity, certainly with PPC, to do email flows. And this is fun because anyone that's been listening to podcasts for a little while, you'll know my catchphrase, marketing is lost from digital marketing. And the thing with email flows is you can actually get creative. And what we mean by this is, I'll give you a few examples. One could be that you send people into a page that says like, hey, sign up for our free giveaway, earn a $200 backpack. Completely waterproof, amazing backpack. You can sign up for a giveaway and we're just going to give some of these things away. So go and sign up. As soon as they sign up, email flow kicks in. So we can use PPC, we can use some, maybe some search ads, probably display and probably video be the most powerful things and run this giveaway and just get as many people as possible to sign up. But while the competition's coming, you could send almost like a daily email with a countdown.
Yeah.
So you've now got a reason because you've come up with countdown. You've got a reason to send an email every single day for, I don't know, 30 days until you do the giveaway. And people aren't going to unsubscribe because they want that product. And it will say, if you unsubscribe, you're no longer entered to this thing. I've now got 29 emails I can send you telling you to buy other products, to, you know, why not add this to your wish list? We're releasing it. The backpack we're going to give away is going to be the end of this year's model. And there's going to be a new upgraded backpack coming out. So if you don't win, you're actually going to get a discount on this thing later. So you can get some really smart email flows working like that. And also when people buy a product, you can have an email flow and you can actually customize using Klaviyo, Saguna, the whole range of, you can use customization based on the product they bought to actually then send specific emails to say, right, you've bought this backpack. Actually, do you want a jumper that fits the backpack absolutely perfectly? Or do you want to buy a jumper that is also waterproof? So you've now got a waterproof backpack and a waterproof jumper. Like, you are sorted for British weather. So there's some good stuff like that that you can then start to do. And what I find so many brands do, and we've been guilty of it, some of our clients are guilty of it, is you just send out a newsletter and you're like sitting there scratching your head on a Monday morning going, what am I going to say to these people? They never buy from me. And it's supposed to be, you know, we've done so many, I think we've literally done sort of 6 months on email in the last 8 or 9 months of the podcast. There's plenty of episodes on it, but get creative with it. Start actually building some marketing and then flow those guys, like you were saying, Daisy, flow them back into the campaigns themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I don't work in email specifically, but I think a couple of things I've written down, like, we don't always have to push a discount. I think so many emails you see, it's like, here's 10% off, here's 15% off. And I think people, you don't want people to rely on those discounts because a lot of customers know that they're coming and they're just waiting for it. I think finding those USPs to say, why buy from us? Like, 10% isn't a USP. Most people offer it. And I think people are so easy to push a discount when they don't really need to a lot of the time.
And if it's the right product, the customer is going to be willing to invest in that product. And I think the only reason you ever buy anything is because there's some sort of problem or challenge. And that could be, I want to look better. So like, I'm going to buy this new item of clothing. It could be that my laptop keeps getting soaked because I live in the UK. I need a waterproof backpack. And I keep using that as an example. It might be that like this table, for example, I bought this on the internet for our office because I wanted a nice meeting table. It was the right size. It was the right price. It was next day delivery. And I thought, do you know what? We've got a meeting room. Well, it actually sits in the corridor, but we've got a corridor and we want to use it as a sort of overflow meeting room. We need a table. And it came with some really lovely matching chairs. And so it broke down a few of my points. And you're underplaying your email, because you did used to work in email before you joined Spec. But yeah, I think it's really important, as you say, that discounts, it's just too easy to put a 10% off. And I think one of the biggest challenges, and we certainly had at least one, if not two brands do this over Black Friday and through Christmas, they really devalued their product and actually had to go, no one's going to pay you full price anymore. Mm-hmm. We're actually going to have to rebuild our product range with new products that we don't discount.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could do like VIPs only get exclusive access to a sale range. It could be this new product's coming out and you guys get it, you do get it half price to test it, but there's strings attached. Yeah. We want you in a focus group. We want some feedback on it. We want some user-generated content. Yeah. You know, we've seen your Instagram. It looks amazing. We want some pictures of you wearing it that we can use as marketing material. That's the cheapest, going back to what we're saying about video, that is the cheapest video or image or content that you've got for that product. So the day your new product goes out on public release, you've got all of that stuff there already. So actually, although it's a discount, it's only to the select 100 customers. You can always send it to another 100 tomorrow if none of them reply. Yeah. So like you're in control of these things. And again, it's like, it's testing.
I think reviews are also good on Tepesh. I think like people are scared to ask people to review. And like we've all, you know, if like 2% of people put a review on your website, that could then influence other people buying later on down the line. So yeah, don't be scared to ask people for a review, because if they don't want to do it, they won't do it.
And I did, and I haven't said this in the podcast yet, I saw an amazing execution, a case study the other day, and I won't say what brand it is because I'm trying to pitch them at the moment. But these guys they'd gone through their Trustpilot reviews, and the ones that were really powerful and compelling, you can see their first name on there and the initial of their surname. And I think someone's a full surname, but you certainly see the initial. So they then went into Shopify and found that customer and emailed them and said, hey, we want to pay you to become our new advert.
That's cool.
Like, we want your face on it. We want your story. The fact that you've used this product for such a life-changing experience, we want to really bring that to life. And there's nothing more powerful than user-generated content and reviews. Why not have that as your Facebook advert, where it's almost, you can even sit in an interview situation, like for any of you guys listening, where we're sitting in the same room, Daisy and I here. But yeah, you sit in a room and interview them and say like, okay, how did your life change as a result of using this product? Like, what led you to use this thing? And how nervous were you of trying it in the first place? And that kind of thing.
What's the saying? People always buy people.
Exactly. Absolutely. Anyway, we've got two left. Point number nine, Daisy.
Point number nine is brand versus non-brand. Probably something we've touched on in, you know, the last year or so. Performance max can be shown for anything, whereas the search side, we are going after those specific keywords. And what we tend to see is that a big percentage of the budget was being spent on brand. And it's kind of a little bit of a cheat way. Like, we are making money from it, but people already know our brand. So we want to do that. You know, people haven't seen us before. Let's appear in front of them. So what we've been playing with is splitting out brand versus non-brand. So you can do a brand exclusion within the settings. It's quite hard to find. You've got to do it. They almost hide it for you. So doing a couple of clicks and excluding our brand, you have to submit it to Google. They then have to approve it, which doesn't take too long. But splitting out budgets on that. So having a big percentage of the budget on non-brand and then a small budget on brand. The goal is new users. You know, as much as we like people to buy again, we also want to appear in front of new users as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brand exclusion feature is quite new.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of our clients who actually said, like, you can do this, and we're like, no, you can't. Just Googled it. And was like, oh, you can. That's amazing. But it's at the time of recording, it's May right now, but it's only been out, I think, for about 2 or 3 months. So it is very fresh. And I always think as soon as something new's there, it's going to take time, especially if you're a smaller, more nimble, but quite lean brand. You've got an opportunity to do this quicker than the big brands, because the big brands will have to go, oh, what brands are we going to exclude? And what you can also do, I think, with the brand exclusions, which we've not played with loads, but I certainly have found it to be quite powerful where we have, is you could exclude, say you're quite a premium brand, you could exclude all the cheaper brands. Mm-hmm. That if people are looking for these brands, I don't want to appear. And again, Google's algorithm, the AI within Performance Max, uses all of this to then build a profile to go, who is the right customer's target for this thing? As much as Google are out to make money, they only really make money if they sell products. So they want to help you guys as much as they can. But yeah, as you say, certainly having one campaign that focuses on non-brand, mm-hmm. or one that has brand, and then all that, you could do a load of other splits separately with the brand excluded in all of those.
And being realistic with the ROAS target. So saying like, we can accept a lower ROI on the non-branded side, you know, or, you know, we'd pay more for the conversion because they're a new customer. We can then get them to answer email to them again. They could become a repeat purchaser. So yeah, bearing all of that in mind as well.
Which almost, we won't today just because of time, but you could almost dive into the whole world of the marketing funnel here.
Mm-hmm.
And say that actually on Google, you could use display to do the top of the funnel and tell people you exist, display in YouTube. Then you can use a mix of display, search, YouTube, bit of performance max, bit of shopping, mm-hmm. to then do that middle consideration stage where now they're actually looking for the product. And then that bottom of funnel when they actually purchase is going to be that brand search, isn't it? Where it's like, I know I'm buying this backpack from this company, so I'm just going to go straight to their site now and buy it. And going back to what you were saying earlier, that's the attribution headache when it just goes direct or not set. And you're like, my campaigns did all the work to get all that revenue in. And in terms of tests, like, this is not our 10th point. I'll come into that in a minute. But in terms of tests, we have done some extreme tests on PPC where we've like doubled the budget overnight and left it for a month. And then we've like halved it from what it was previously. So like at least a 75% drop the next month, and going, how did all the other channels perform? Like, how reliant is the direct channel, which I like to call it the I don't flipping know channel in GA4. But you see what starts to happen in direct or in SEO as a result of PPC dropping, to go, do you know what? PPC is definitely doing middle funnel, and it's probably doing some top of funnel as well. And it's not doing as much of the bottom of funnel that actually gets the attribution. It gets the PPC made a sale as it probably deserves.
Yeah. I think like taking Facebook into account as well, it's so easy for clients to say Facebook is doing 19-1. And it might be, but like the numbers in Meta are always lying. Like it takes a lot of things into consideration. Mm. So again, going back to the point of looking at different sources to decide what the actual overall answer is for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And point number 10 then, so bringing this home on our list, is splitting the campaigns by sale range. We have some clients that they always have discounted products. They have like a bit of an outlet section or a kind of last season or just general stuff we want to get rid of now, which is completely normal, completely healthy. And we sometimes actually segment those products to show them in one campaign, which is loads of discount content like end of season, end of line, which is a good way, I think, from a marketing point of view, actually, of getting rid of or doing discounts and getting rid of stock without devaluing everything else. Saying it's end of line, it's autumn, winter, and it's currently coming into summer. Although it doesn't seem to arrive in the UK yet. But certainly, yeah, saying it's coming in, you know, we're into summer range now and this is our autumn, winter kind of end of line, last stock or last chance to buy is a good marketing message for not devaluing all of that other stuff. But certainly having a sale campaign, and I guess the biggest thing, come back to what you said right at the start, Daisy, about controlling budget. Budgets and ROAS targets and sort of segmenting stuff out. On the sale range, you might go, do you know what? We just only want to spend 10% of our budget there. We don't want to invest heavily in sale because we don't want to be seen as a sale business. And also our margins are so big on that anyway. We don't want to spend loads and the ROI target needs to be really, really high.
Yeah. And I think one of the most beneficial things to Google is having that price cross out. So we've all seen it, the green number alongside the black crossed out. Google favors those. Like looking at Google free shopping, it favors sale just in general because everyone loves a sale, who doesn't? So even driving customers to our website via that product, and they might buy something different once they land on the site. But yeah, as you said, I think we don't look at more than like 10% of budget on outlet products.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think summarizing all 10 points, if you keep all your products in one big campaign, you're just a numpty. There's so many things you can do. As we've said today, like these are just 10 examples of stuff that we're doing. I think if we get you back on in 6 months and say, what are the 10? Some of these would still be here, but there'd be a completely different list as well. So yeah, I mean, it goes without saying, if you guys are spending 5K plus a month on Google, you want some support, you want some help, reach out. Daisy and I would love to chat, as would anybody else in our PPC team. So feel free to get in touch. But yeah, Daisy, thank you so much for your time and also your insights. It's been great to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great stuff. And for everybody listening at home, thank you so much for tuning in today. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. We are running something quite fun in the next few weeks. I'll be sharing more over the next few weeks about it as well, but we are getting a very, very successful CEO from a very successful Shopify store to run a round table session. There will be a price on the tickets, but unfortunately at the time of recording this, we just hadn't decided the price. The date's only just been confirmed like a few hours ago, but I will be sharing more over the next few weeks. But it's gonna be a 2-hour session. It's gonna be a real, really good opportunity to ask questions to that person. I'm gonna host the round table. They're gonna be there discussing how they've done stuff. Great opportunity to have a Q&A and also meet some other people from the show. It's only gonna be limited to a certain amount of people as well. But stay tuned for that. If you are interested, drop us a note anyway and we can certainly send you an email once there's more information. But thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. If it's your first time listening, what an absolute pleasure to have you listening to our show. So thank you again. Hit subscribe, leave us a review if you haven't already. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can subscribe to our weekly newsletter for exclusive offers at winningwithshopify.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook group by searching for Winning with Shopify on Facebook. Over and out.